fires one towards the goal. That's going to be blocked by Travis Wigeon.
Well, this is more like it.
This is Slangin' the Biscuit. Here's Travis Wigeon and Dave Wheeler.
I love hearing that intro music so much. That I would say, honest to God, I think that our intro goes harder than any other podcasting intro on the planet. That rock riff, Jeff from Watertown doing the play-by-play, the sound effects, the ASMR that you got your boy, I can't remember his name. Was it Joseph? Joe?
Jared Schaefer.
Jared to do all the ASMR and then the voiceovers on top. Man, that intro goes hard. I love it.
It's actually funny. There's a, when I, because I you had the video produced. I produced the audio on that one, and I actually snuck in a line in the play-by-play from a very famous movie. And I'm curious to know. Let us know down in the comments what movie and what is the line, because I kind of like crossfaded it with the actual play-by-play from the game that you were in to a line from a movie. See if you can point it out down in the comments. And tell you what, how about this? Anyone, and I don't know if you're cool with this, we're doing this on the fly, Travis. Anyone that gets the right answer, and we'll go through them after, we'll put them in a draw for a coffee mug?
Yeah, why don't we do this, the right answers, depending on how many right answers we get. You get a free set of trading cards, the Collector Series trading cards, Motor City Vibrate, the whole 7-piece set. Now I'm sold out of the one card. It's only 7 now, not the 8-piece set on the house. Mail it out to you, first class.
And that hockey card collection is going to be growing with this whole Spain thing. By the way, am I right to say you're getting cold feet on this whole thing? Do we need to talk you through this a little bit later on in the show or what?
Yeah, I know we were talking about this before we started recording. I want to touch a little bit on that, on the cold feet. Maybe starting in Spain later on towards the end of the show, or not towards the end, maybe the first quarter. We also got to talk about Chris Simon. Rest in peace to him, man. That was sad news the other day. We got a lot of stuff. We got some Fed talk. We got some Spain talk. We got some Eddie Belfort talk. We got to talk about Dave's missing eye. We got a lot of exciting things to go on for today. I saw...
My eye has been missing longer than Kate Middleton.
Which one is it, by the way? Does your eye do any funny tricks, by the way?
My wife can tell when I've had a little too much to drink because my bad eye, which is my right eye, starts getting a little lazy and it'll start drifting a little bit. Cosmetically, I got lucky. It's still my real eyeball. Like, it's still there. You can see scar. If you get up close, you can see scarring below my eyebrow. You can see scarring down in my eyelid. But I broke my orbital bone above my eyebrow and down into my cheekbone a little bit. And essentially what happened was is that if this is the eyeball, my fist, and my hand is the retina, if a retina comes off, they can usually reattach that. What happened with mine is there was so much blunt force trauma that it tore a hole in the back of my retina. Now, if you think of a retina, it's thinner than a tissue paper. If you tried to take out a sewing needle and thread and tried to sew up a tissue paper, you just do more damage, and they can't sew retinas. So they told me, you're done. And not only that, my eye doctor told me once upon a time that right now it's muscle memory that's kind of keeping my eyes moving at the same pace. Like, it's not lazy unless I have a couple drinks. But later on in life, that will go away and the muscle retention won't be there. And there could be one point where I'm eating my soup in my 80s and it just kind of goes and falls in.
Like, it would physically come out of your face.
She said it might. It might, just because, you know, the less it works, and if it stops moving, it won't be as strong and it may just get too small and shrivel up and whop. Might happen. I hope it happens in front of my wife.
I was picturing more so like when you get older and that your one eye is making eye contact with him, but the other one's looking down, and then me being the other person, I don't know which eye to look at. Do I look at the lazy one, or do I look at, like, you know what I mean? Like,
I've encountered a few people who have had either a lazy eye or a cross eye or whatever it may be. And the easiest thing to do is either ask ahead of time saying, hey, I'm having a hard time with this. Which eye would you like me to look at? What's going to make you more comfortable? Or if you don't want to do that, just stare right in the middle, just right in the bridge of the nose. That's always the easy go-to.
When was the last time you actually skated in full equipment?
Pre-pandemic. It's funny because I ended up hawking my gear probably about halfway through the pandemic. I wasn't getting any use out of it. It was hard to find a place to skate, and I wasn't allowed into arenas for a period of time as well. So outside of doing a little outdoor skating, I finally just hawked all my gear, and I'm actually playing next weekend. Playing with a bunch of my old beer league buddies are getting together. One of the guys is works with True North in the Winnipeg Jets, and the rink is empty one night, so we're going to be playing at Center Ice down at Canada Life Center. And I'm actually borrowing a buddy of mine's gear, who we just happened to be the same height, same build. He played, actually had a really good career, just retired last year. He was playing over in Finland last, but he had a cup of coffee in the NHL with the Vancouver Canucks and the Phoenix Coyotes and the LA Kings, I believe. And his name is Sean Heschke. and he is from Saskatchewan and met a girl here when he was playing with the Manitoba Moose and decided to retire here. And so he's like, I ain't using my gear. You can borrow it. So I'm gonna be putting on his gear and getting out there. So I'll see if I can get some B-roll from you. It may not be pretty, but I'll see if I can pull some B-roll so you can have a good chuckle at me and how bad it's been. It was kind of like when I the Winter Classic that happened here in Winnipeg between the Oilers and Jets. This would have been, about 8 years ago or so. And it was the outdoor game. It was super warm out for the Heritage Classic. And they played the alumni game, and Gretzky went out and played, and was like, oh my God, we're going to see Gretzky on skates. He hadn't skated in close to 5 years, and holy moly, he had a hard time staying on his blades. He looked like a newborn calf on skates. It was really interesting. And even he after said, like, wow, I didn't realize it went away that quickly. He even said, I don't think I'll be going on the ice much, if at all.
I'm curious to see you snapping around. I wouldn't mind seeing those first couple strides and see what you can actually do. Because I know we talk about hockey a lot. We've been talking about this for almost 2 years doing the show together. But I've never actually seen you put rubber to road. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, listen,
I've been the punching bag on many of your jokes the last year and a half. You came up with the 12-pass Richin. You came up with the, did you really play in the Fed or were you just there? Now it's my turn, buddy. My turn.
Like I said, you can have the B-roll all you want. You can absolutely make fun of the all the way. If I can get video of going out and playing a pickup game with all my old overweight, overage buddies, then absolutely you can take a piss out of me. But my advantage was I was a really good skater. I was a really good passer. Man, I had really good vision coming out of my zone. I could always find a guy, and I was always able to thread it through. I had a pillow of a shot. Terrible shot. And that's why
let's be honest, though, as a D-man, though, those are the best ones. You throw a little, muffin in there, off a shin pad, off a blade, boom, top shelf. Goalie didn't even see it. Wheels, you got the primary assist.
Bingo. And that was I mentioned Eric Desjardins a few episodes ago, and that was kind of what I modeled myself after. I'm like, well, if I can't fire it in there like an Al MacInnis or Josh Morrissey, then, if I can get it to the net and pinball it off a few guys on the way there, great. Other than that, I was really responsible on my own end. I cared more about the plus minus than I did anything else. If I picked up an apple here and there, great. If I scored a goal, it was time to party, but those were very far and few between. And I didn't like doing it, but when I got the tap on the shoulder, I'd go out and chuck knuckles if I had to. It wasn't my favorite thing in the world, but I like being a physical player. More so, I would say if we were playing EA Sports, I'd probably be your sixth or seventh defenseman. But I was really good about getting the puck out of my zone, and I could make a good pass, and that was about it.
Are you a good glue guy? Good locker room guy?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, listen, we had 4.5-hour bus rides. It's kind of where I cut my teeth doing comedy because the guys were bored and we were only allowed watching so many movies. And this was before the days of iPads and iPhones and the odd guy had a Game Boy and whatnot. But it was, Wheels, get back here and tell us some jokes. So I'd basically just sit there and do a modified version of stand-up comedy sitting around one of the back tables with the guys. And that was, I was always up for making a joke or keeping light of things. I mean, I managed to wear the assistant captain letter a couple times when I was playing, and guys were just always good about, if they needed to lighten up the situation, they'd come to me more often than not.
I don't know if this is necessarily PG. When I was playing AAA hockey in the city of Winnipeg for the Winnipeg Hawks, we had a road trip to Thunder Bay. And I remember we showed up super, super early to the rink because it wasn't early enough to check into the hotel. So we were sitting there waiting at the rink, and one of the guys mentioned, could somebody entertain us? This is boring over here. And so one of the guys, not a word of a lie, he gets up, drops his drawers, pulls back his skin, and says, guys, I think I have something. What do we think? And we all collectively gathered around and inspected his spectacle unanimously as a team. That was our entertainment. You're just reminding me of that, of everybody's bored and we need some entertainment.
Yeah, listen, when it comes to the homoeroticism in organized sports for males, the stories are long and we'll leave it at that.
Do you miss playing hockey? Do you miss skating and snapping around and being a part of that camaraderie, that locker room environment?
Yes and no, but at the same time, it's the same way I miss high school. I loved it while I was there. I'll always have fond memories of it, but I don't know if I necessarily want to go back and do it on a regular basis. I've got kids now, and they're my focus, and I'd rather drop them off at the activities that they have and spend the time that they have. I mean, I still get active when I can with dog walking and doing yoga and bedroom gymnastics with my wife. And so, I mean, I try and stay active that way. But as far as going out and having a weekly game, I like the idea of it, but I'm not saying I'm getting brittle in my old age or anything, but I enjoyed it while I did. I'll always love the game. And to me, honestly, doing this show fills my cup as far as hockey.
Because I was thinking about that the other day. I put up a Q&A on Instagram for some questions for future episodes. And a lot of people were asking about like my experience through minor pro hockey and like what was this like? What was that like? What did you really enjoy? What were some standouts? What are some good memories? And I was thinking the things that come to my mind in a positive light were never, oh, we won that game in overtime, or remember that one time where this happened or that happened. It was always around the guys, not like a specific event, but the guys, the camaraderie, the locker room, that what did you call it, Dave? Homoeroticism? Is that the wording you used?
Yep.
That on the bus, in the cars, in the vans, when the team would travel by van, stuff like that. That's what comes to my mind for me. And not being on a team, I definitely miss skating. I miss pushing the boulder up the hill, because that pursuit of like masculine achievement, of trying to work towards a goal, that's always fueled me my entire life. But if there was one thing that I really, really miss about not having a team and playing, it's the guys in that locker room energy of the post-shower talk. You got seven guys lined up in a row all naked having a conversation about God knows what for who knows where. Stuff like that. Always enjoy that.
And you know what? God love you for that. And I totally understand that. It's that 300 mentality. And you will find that. And I'm not trying to be, you know, the old wise Gandalf here. But you'll find that. You'll just find that in different aspects of your life. And believe me when I tell you, when you find the right partner in life, it will, to use the term again, it will fill your cup. And you'll be able to share those stories and have somebody know you so intimately and know how you're feeling just by the way your eyebrows are sitting. And you'll find that camaraderie not only in your life partner, but just in people that you encounter. And you know, it's funny. As I get older, and I think a lot of people who are my age or older will find that you kind of start editing your friends list. Not to say that you don't have people that you in your life that you love, but you don't talk to them as often. And you really cherish the ones that you keep inside of that very small circle. And it gets smaller and smaller as you get older. And it's nothing that you sign up for. It just kind of happens naturally. I'll give you a perfect example. I was out in Edmonton years ago for a stag of one of my old homeboys that I played hockey with. And we all got together. And some of us hadn't seen each other in quite some time, including me, who had been living in Winnipeg. And a lot of these guys were living in Edmonton. And I leaned over to my old college roommate and I said, man, this really makes me want to move back to Alberta. And he says, why? And I said, well, just for this. I mean, getting to do this on a regular basis and all the laughter and the camaraderie. And he looks at me and he goes, dude, he goes, this is as rare for me as it is for you. He says, we all live in the same city and this is rare for us. We have jobs. We have kids. We live in opposite ends of town. We have commitments that we have to go to. So getting together like this in a large group is very rare, regardless of where you live.
I was actually thinking about that the other day. Like in Vancouver, it's probably the least friendly city in all of Canada. And then when you compare it to Winnipeg, where it's on the license plate, friendly Manitoba, like our friendship, the other different friendships that I do have in the city, you definitely miss that. And that does come back to that locker room environment, that locker room and that mob. Almost, maybe it's primal. Because I'm thinking like back in the days, back like 1,000 years ago, back to the 300 days, you had a group of men that, you know, they're in the ditch getting shot at, they're getting blown up at, and they're like, oh, missed. You know, like
that's a different kind of camaraderie. I mean, we always use the metaphor of going to war when you get into the playoffs and whatnot, but that's a different kind of camaraderie. That's things that you share with somebody that you can't really share with anyone else. It's just one of those things where you go, we were both in the weeds together. We were in that foxhole for 3 days and didn't see the sunlight for longer than that. And,
well,
and
isn't it similar though, but it's different. Like you're getting shot at in the ditches, obviously apples to oranges, but we're killing a 5-on-3, a 6-on-3, 2 minutes left, big shot block, big blocker save. We chipped the puck out. We killed another 30 seconds, right? Like, oh, we lost 7-0 in game 3. We came back. We smoked them in game 4 in overtime. It's very similar in a different way.
I'll put it to you this way. They have similarities when it comes to bonding memories and when it comes to teamwork and like, hey, remember we were on that same wavelength together and we got that thing done and we pulled through it. One has to do with life and death. One has to do with winning or losing. So I understand the metaphor, and yes, it comes down to a bonding moment, and life is just a series of moments. And I don't want to take the title away from that you just gave to Vancouver, but I would put Toronto ahead of Vancouver as far as unfriendly cities. Just saying.
You think so? Do you want to get into that for a split second? Like, I was in the elevator today cleaning my apartment. I'm taking the garbage out, taking the recycling out, picking up some packages. And when I'm in the elevator, I've kind of made this my goal. Whenever there's somebody in the elevator, I always say, hey, how are you doing? How's your day? How do you like living here? What do you think? I put them in control, and I also want to learn about my new apartment that I'm living at. And more often than not, I just get a, good. How's the apartment? That's okay. I've been here. What do you mean you've been here? If no shit, you're here. You're in the elevator. Like, what do you actually think? Oh, have a good day. Okay. Like, nobody wishes me to have a good day. Even, you know what? You know the friendliest interaction I had since I've been here in Vancouver is? I was walking to yoga the other day. So the yoga class starts, I think, at like 6:30. Doors open 6:15, so I leave here around 5:30. And I'm walking on the seawall. It's dark. It's quiet. and there's this homeless guy. He's carrying like three bags of beer cans and pop cans. I honestly thought it was Big Sexy at first, and I realized no, Big Sexy, Big Sexy doesn't have a beard, and you know he's a little bit more groomed than that. But I digress. And this guy's coming by me, and I said, "Morning, how are you?" And he's like, "I'm doing great. If I was doing any better, I'd have money for these cans. But hey, I'm going to the depot." I'm like, "Where does this guy trade the cans at? I don't know." And I said, "Well, what are you doing for the rest of the day?" "Well, I'm gonna go find a spot to eat. Hopefully, people give me some money, and maybe I can go buy a grocery or like a sandwich or like some groceries." And the guy was so happy and positive compared to the people in my apartment and my my elevator that don't even want to say like, "Hey, how's your day going?" You know, maybe it's the Manitoban in me.
Well, it definitely is. I can guarantee you that it's definitely the Manitoban in you, but. It's amazing how the people that are seen don't want to be seen, and the people that are often ignored are happy when they are seen.
Well, I was probably the only guy that asked how his day was going. Right? Like, he's a homeless guy. He's got three bags of garbage cans. He's a little disheveled, kind of stinks. And I just said, "Hey, what are you doing today? What's your plans for the day?" Probably hasn't had that asked in a very long time.
Well, I'll be honest with you. More often than not, when I'm pulling up to a street corner and there's somebody who's panhandling on the road, and I'm right there next to him, and you know all that's separating us is a glass window, I'll usually roll down the window and they go to hold out their cup. And I said, "No, sorry, I don't have any money for you today. I just want to check in. Are you okay? Is there anything you need outside of a couple of dollars?" And they'll be like, "No." Or sometimes they're like, "Nah, he's new laces." And so if I'm at the dollar store next time, I'll grab some laces. And if I happen to see them, I'll have them in the vehicle. I'm like, "Hey, you asked for laces." And that, just having a quick conversation or having somebody go, "Wow, somebody actually gave a crap enough for me to remember that," to me, goes a lot further than throwing a toonie in. So I appreciate your candor. I appreciate your decorum in doing that, because oftentimes those people who are more often than not ignored, just the fact that they've been asked and they've been treated like a human goes a long way.
Can I change the subject for one split second on a little bit of a maybe slightly offside topic I wanted to mention? Is that okay, Dave?
Go for it. Let's go. We are going to talk hockey eventually, though. We promise.
We're going to do this. We're going to do the ad. And then we're going to talk hockey and get to the meat and potatoes of today's episode. But I wanted to talk about this for a second. Andrew Tate is somebody who has absolutely changed my life. From waking up every single day, it doesn't matter how you feel. You need to get stuff done, because nobody cares about how you feel. So why should you care how you feel? Right? So go do something worth masculine achievement. Go do something, whether it's going to yoga to improve your mobility, whether it's going to Muay Thai, learning how to fight because things are getting kind of dicey out here in the streets of Vancouver, whether it's learning to just be genuine and authentic to attract certain energy into your life, right? So like, for example, Dave and I think Dave's a very authentic person, and being able to attract his energy has been very net positive for me, but being authentic as well has repelled people that maybe are not authentic, and that energy that I don't want anywhere near me. Even to an extent, like with women, learning, okay, listen, you know, if I open the door for my woman every time we go somewhere, if I'm always driving, we're together, like, she doesn't need to drive. I'll take care of her and do other little things to make her feel heard and appreciated, and not trying to solve every problem, just listen to her. It's going to make life so much easier. And Andrew Tate is somebody who has changed my life. And I think a lot of the things that we just talked about kind of fall into some of the things that maybe I've picked up from him. And he'll probably never see this, but I just wanted to say thank you, because, you know, things are getting dicey on his side of the world. And he changed my life for the positive the last 2 years.
Well, look at it this way. It comes down to, because I know that name is a very triggering name for a lot of people, and there's probably some people who have punched out already, or some that are sticking around going, getting angry and gritting their teeth about it. And I know it's a very divisive name when you say the name Andrew Tate. Here's what it comes down to. Can you separate the art from the artist? And that's a term that's used a lot when it comes to music, and we'll use Michael Jackson as an example here. There's a guy.
Can I quote you what you said about Michael Jackson one time? You're like, "God, he was talented. He could dance. He could sing. He just couldn't stop touching kids."
Well, and I mean, and he's got that track record, right? But I mean, when it comes right down to it, nobody can deny that the guy could write a hit. And I don't care who you are, when you hear dun 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 bum bum bum. You know, I mean, you start grooving to it. The guy can sing. You can't take that away from him. So if it's to the point where if you hear the music and you go, "That's Michael Jackson," and your mind instantly goes to those awful things that happened in his allegedly happened, he's convicted, then that's not going to be a thread that goes into your brain proper. But if you can take the music and just go, "Damn, that was good music," and it makes you feel good, and you can separate that from everything else that happened, then you can do the same thing with a guy like Andrew Tate, who has had a lot of allegations against him, and we're still waiting for his day in court, and we're going to see how that plays out. But if you can take the things that he says that drives you to be a better person, then that's okay. I mean, nobody's perfect. We are all sinners in the eyes of the Lord. So even in the good book, it says, let he is with who is without sin cast the first stone. And I think we've forgotten a lot of that. So as long as you're not sitting there going, I want to do exactly the same business model as Andrew Tate when it comes to his allegations, then it's a different story. But if you can take those positive messages, you can take those positive affirmations that he's been giving and lead that to a better life, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Well, Arthur Woods, he's one of the Patreon members. He was the one that asked me to talk about this, and I don't agree with everything that Tate says. There's some things where he says that I'm like, I don't like that. But it's like grocery shopping. You and I talked about this before, Dave. I walk into the Save-On Foods. I don't buy the whole store. I pick a little bit of here, a little bit of there. All right, and I'm checking out. Like, there's more for everybody else. Maybe you like that. Maybe you don't. I don't know. But not every single thing out there is that something that I like. Taylor Swift, incredible music. She's got some songs that make me want to dance. I'm not a personal fan of her, but she makes some damn good songs. Same thing.
I agree with you. And listen, I think life would be pretty boring if we agreed on everything. And I am more than happy to have healthy discussions and debates with people about anything and everything. It's one of the joys in life. I think I'm actually toying with the idea of having the words, I'm glad we never agreed on everything on my epitaph, either that or never a dull moment. It's going to be one of those two. But yeah, it's just, I mean, life would be really boring if there was no yin to the yang. You know what I'm saying? There's always got to be a counterpoint to the point. And I'm not saying you have to disagree all the time, but it's good to keep life and it's good to keep you on your toes. And the day you stop learning is the day you die. And you only learn when you come across something that you don't know or something that you disagree with. And if you have an opportunity to learn from somebody, do it. Why are we getting so philosophical on the show? What is going on? What, I know it was a blood red moon this morning when I woke up. Is that what's going on here?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe we're just maturing. I mean, I'm 27, about to hit 28 in 2 months. You're 26 going on 27?
I am proud to say I am turning 45 this calendar year, and these gray hairs are I've earned every one of them.
You're a geezer. Old geezer.
For the record, geezer is actually a point of compliment over in the United Kingdom. It means it's a well put together gentleman.
Speaking of well put together, why don't we talk about our presenting sponsor for the show? They've been with us since day one. This is a great transitioning point. The team at Sheath Underwear, the yin to your yang. Put your yin yang in the best pair of underwear money can buy, only from the team at Sheath. They have this incredible dual pouch technology. It's a segregated compartment for your dick and your balls, so they're not sticking to the side of your leg. They're not bat winging. You're going to feel comfortable and aerated, cool, all day, every single day, only from the team at Sheath. You go to the link in the video description at sheathunderwear.com. Use the code BIZKIT69, B-I-Z-K-I-T 69, for 20% off the greatest pair of underwear money has ever bought. I feel like everybody's already bought their pair of Sheath underwear by now, with them being the sponsor for every episode for the last 2 years almost. But if you haven't, pick up a pair today.
I just had somebody send me an email to my work account saying, hey, what is the code to get underwear from Sheath? And I said, it's BIZKIT69. And so I'm pretty sure they got another order shipped this past week.
Beauty. Speaking of finding things, though, you know what? I got a message this week. Remember we did that clip like 2 months ago asking for anybody that sees my FPHL jerseys hanging around, please send me a message because I want to buy them off you?
Mm-hmm.
Big Brian Qdoba. I think that's his name, in Detroit, has my Motor City jersey. He messaged me and said, hey, somebody send me your clip. I have the jersey. And I said, great, I'll buy it off you. And he's like, but I really like this jersey. It's also like the only jersey that fits him because he's a bigger boy. And I said, listen, I will get you the best merch ever. I'll get you some like Sling the Biscuit, like sweaters, the mug, trading card. I'll get you the whole shebang if you are willing to sell me this jersey. So he's got some merch coming on the way. Brian, I'm excited to hear what you think, but I'm also excited to get back my jersey. So,
well, listen, like I said, I think you could have just found a loophole on this one and just ordered one from the Motor City Rockers shop. And you could have, because you just want it for a frame down the road. You want it down in the pool room. You want it down in the rec room. I think it would have looked just as good. And you could have said, yeah, that's a game worn jersey. Wink, wink. Brian in Detroit has the OG one.
Brian has the actual game worn one. It's the one that I actually wore. So
that's pretty cool.
Also, I think, too, we talked about this before. If I put the order in, I think they would have just taken my money and not shipped the jersey. I could put it in my mom's name, and then they'll be like, why is somebody in Winnipeg ordering the jersey? Let's just not ship the jersey. It's the most fed thing ever. But, hey, glad this is going to work out.
I think they would have looked like, jersey sale? Take the money. Let's go.
What's that? We're going to go bankrupt next year? Yeah, we need this money. Send him his jersey.
Bingo. I don't think they're going to look a gift horse in the mouth.
That's by the way, did you see the Diamond Hands fight the other day?
I did see a clip roll across. I can't remember if I ended up watching it. To be honest with you, I was going back in the archives and watching, I know we're going to talk about them later, but a lot of Chris Simon fights from back in the day against Probert and Domi. And yeah, he had over 100 fights in his career. So no, I missed the Diamond Hands one. Did he, I'm assuming he won.
Yeah, he laid a whooping on Goodhauer in Wheeling with the Wheeling Nailers. Man, Diamond Hands is so exciting. I don't know what it is, Dave. Even though the fact that he has said in his show with AJ Galante, the Talking Trash podcast, that he wants to beat my face in.
Yeah, why is that?
I don't know. I mean, you've been with me for every single episode the last 2 years, Dave. I've done nothing but stroke the guy off and say how much I enjoy watching him, how he's making hockey exciting, and I enjoy everything that he posts. But I'm curious why he wants to beat me up. Do you see I got inducted into the Bad Boys Club with the Trashers? No?
No, do tell.
I got added to the Bad Boys Club. So AJ Galante, who is the... Do you know much about the Danbury Trashers or no?
Just what you told me about them.
Okay, so if you don't know the Danbury Trashers, there is a Netflix documentary on them. Basically, dad owns a garbage removal company, buys a hockey team, names it the Trashers after the trash removal company, and makes his 16-year-old son the general manager of the hockey team. And they're pulling all sorts of stunts from... putting fish in the what do you call it, like the air ducts, rafters, and the air ducts of the other team's room, like all these types of interesting things. They only lasted for about 2 years. I think this was maybe 2005, 2006 during a lockout. But so many interesting things, and AJ Galante has really popped off since this documentary's come out. I mean, he's 16, 17, 18 years old, being the general manager of a pro hockey team. You're literally going from playing NHL video games to managing a pro hockey team. And he does what they call the Bad Boys Club, where he takes different NHL players or different like professional hockey players, gets a graphic guy to Photoshop them into a Trashers jersey. And you'll see on the video version of the show, they added me to the Bad Boys Club. I'm now a member of the Bad Boys Trashers Hall of Fame.
Congratulations. What did you do to earn that honor?
I gave up less than 12 goals. I haven't given up a single goal for the Trashers. What time is it in Danbury? Zero past Ridgen.
Zeros across the board, baby.
If you wanted to call me a flaming dumpster fire, you could, because I'm playing for the Trashers, part of the Babel. Yeah, anyway.
Well, congratulations, sir. That's quite the accolade.
Thank you very much. Speaking of shout-outs also, too, I want to give a shout-out to Rich Silver. He's one of the Patreon members. He's been a listener since day one of the show. Former member of the U.S. Marines in the U.S. in Detroit. And Rich, love you and hope you're well, man.
Amazing. I want to get into this whole you signing over in Spain and me getting really excited, and we're talking Spanish last week on the show and doing all these really cool things, and we're getting drone shots of the city and it looks stunning and you're getting cold feet. What could possibly be going on?
Mm-hmm. So I had a couple of people reach out who played in the Spain League, and specifically Thomas McGuire. He played in Watertown last year. He's playing Baton Rouge right now. He played in Spain for the same team. Actually, the video of the apartment that I put on the show last week, that was his apartment where he was living. Hmm. And just getting some information about the team and the league. So it's going to be a slightly lower level than the Fed. Without, it's pretty easy to tell. Also, compared to my Swedish team, the last team I played for in Varberg in Division 3, very comparable. So less hockey level than the Fed. But this is like where things thrive for myself personally. I love experiences. I love traveling. I have a huge passion for travel, which we've documented painstakingly over the past 2 years. And also, this podcast and my YouTube vlog thrive off of those experiences. If I was, let's say, playing for the Motor City Rockers for 5 years in a row in Detroit, you'd probably stop watching after about year one. It's boring. It's the same thing. Beginning these different experiences, going to Sweden, going to Norway, going to Spain. This is what really kind of moves the needle over here and also gets me very excited. So I'm kind of worried that the hockey is not at the level that I want it to be, because egotistically, I want to play in the Fed. I want to play at that level specifically. But I also want to go to a place where I'm appreciated and I'm treated like an actual human being to an extent. I know I'm an asset at the end of the day, but it's not the same in Europe that it is in North America, where they can release you, they can trade you for a steak dinner, for a hotel, for a bus, for a massage table, for, you know, a jumbo family pack of Costco mustard, and trade you for whatever they want, as opposed to in Europe, they pay for your transfer card, so they have an initial investment up front, and they get rid of you, they lose you for nothing. So they're going to be a lot more loyal to you. So it's a catch-22. I'm excited, though. I'm really excited to see a new part of the world. I don't speak Spanish. I've never been to Spain. I'm just very excited to learn and to document it all on YouTube. So I wish the level was a little bit higher, but this is also a safety net option, if you want to call it that, or at least a worst case scenario option. The same way my first year in Sweden, when I signed with Flemingsberg, that was the original safety net option. And then when the you know, the scandemic kind of came about and everything shut everything down. That was the only place to play, so it ended up working out quite nicely. But here, where I'm trying to, we're trying to still find offers that if there's more money involved or more opportunity, more games, more this, more that, we're going to go with that. And that is specifically in the contract that we signed, that this is the team that I play for in Spain. If something better pops up, it's cool. We have a couple clauses in there to get out of it, no problem. And they were very aware of this. But this is my cold feet, if you want to call it that. But I'm very excited to go play in Spain.
Well, good.
If that is the case.
And I'm happy to hear that, because I'll tell you a quick story about an old roommate of mine who was a good hockey player, played for the Vancouver Canucks for a little bit, and then played the majority of the time with the Moose, won a Calder Cup with the Chicago Wolves, and got an offer to go over and play in Germany, got an offer to go over and play in a bunch of different European cities, and he was kind of kicking rocks about it. And I was like, what's the problem? And he's like, I understand, you know, that you've kind of realized that, you know, the shot of getting back to the NHL is likely gone. I said, but, you know, what's the problem? You're still playing. And he says, no, I don't speak the language, and the food's probably going to suck, and I don't know anyone over there.
The food's going to suck. Are you kidding me?
This was the attitude going in. And the same idea with going over to Spain is there are people that literally grind their butts off 40-plus hours a week, 2 weeks vacation a year, and they save up for years on end to go on that 2 week, 10 day, 1 week, whatever it is, for an experience, and they pay gobs upon gobs of money to do so. And here you are being offered an opportunity to go over, and someone's going to feed you, and someone's going to pay you, and someone's going to show you around. You're going to have a safety net there, and you're saying no to this? And so I'm glad you're going in with the attitude of this is going to be something that only a very small percentage of people get to do around the world, is go and not only experience a different culture, but live a different culture. I don't care if they put you in net against a bunch of minor hockey players. You take that opportunity.
Well, this is my ego speaking. I want to play at the highest level I possibly can. This is one of my career goals, right? I want to play. I realize I'm not playing the NHL. That ship sailed a very, very long time ago. However, as somebody in the minor pro circuit, I want to play at the highest level I can for as long as I can. I want to make as much money as I can. On YouTube-wise, I want to document as much as I can, which is also going to be financially beneficial, so that when I'm done playing hockey, when this old ass gives out, when I get the other hip surgery done, I'm financially set for a while and I can move into whatever else I'm doing. So that's the only reason why I'd be a little bit hesitant to go to Spain is, okay, is there something more beneficial for my career? But as far as actually going to Spain, I love this kind of stuff. Like, I love experiencing new stuff. I can't do the same thing for too long. I get bored very easily.
Well, listen, man, this is a great opportunity. Not only that, not only are you going to get to see one city in Spain, you're going to get to see seven others. As I understand, it's an 8-team league. So you're going to be able to go and experience different parts of what is, according to statistics, one of the better countries in this entire world. Like, I mean, God love you, man. Like, I'm envious. There's a lot of people watching the show right now going, damn, I wish I was that guy. Like, there are people that would trade places with you in a heartbeat to be able to go and do stuff like this. So I'm glad to hear that it's not necessarily cold feet. It's from more of a situation of you'd like to be playing better hockey. And I totally understand that you want to play against the best. But here's the thing. That team that you signed with, 0-13 last year. So if you can go in and bring them up to at least 500 hockey and you're putting good numbers on the board, guess what? Other teams going to come and knock it. And it's not like you're an old bird by now. You're still a spring chicken. You haven't even hit your prime yet. You will get other opportunities if you put up solid numbers.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if I ever told the story. I remember when I was working kitchen jobs, because I went to culinary school for a year, and then I worked in kitchen jobs and bakeries for about 4 years while I was playing junior hockey, balancing 40 hours a week plus the actual hockey side of things. And I worked at this restaurant at the Winnipeg Airport. Maybe you've heard of it, the Blue Marble, Dave? You ever remember that one?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Awesome restaurant at the time. And I remember thinking to myself in the kitchen when it was hot, plus 30, in the middle of summer, you know, we're getting slammed on the line, dinner rush, thinking, man, I'm at the airport, but what if instead of doing this job, I could just go to the airport and travel and make money? Wouldn't that be the dream? And I get to do that. So for me to say, oh, I don't want to go to Spain, I'll just go to Detroit. Are you insane?
Yeah, but listen, Detroit's still a different experience. And, you know, there's some people that will probably never see Detroit in their entire life. And there you were. You spent a good, 6-7 months there? It's amazing.
3 months.
You spent 3 months there. Amazing.
And more importantly, I made it out with my life. That's the big key part.
Yeah, because you were living pretty close to 8 Mile, too, and everyone's seen that movie with Eminem.
Literally, anybody ask what was my experience like, wake up, go to the rink, come home, get groceries, come home, eat, nap, work, don't leave. Repeat. For 3 months.
And you saw a lot of Detroit Lions and Detroit Red Wings and Detroit Tigers hats.
Yeah, not really. I didn't go out much, to be honest.
Pistons?
I didn't see much. I don't know. Maybe they were all in downtown Detroit, but I didn't really venture too much into the actual Detroit area. I just stayed like in my little suburb, my area around the rink. I didn't really leave too much.
That's a bummer because one of my best buddies, he played Div 3 for Manhattanville, and he said it was about an hour and a half subway or train ride into the city. But every opportunity he had, he went into New York City because he thought, I'm here. Like, I'm literally on the doorstep. I'd be stupid not to go and experience as much as I can of it. And he was actually in Manhattanville when the planes hit the Twin Towers years ago. And obviously, he didn't go into the city much after that. But he said leading up to that, it was just an amazing experience. And he still has very fond memories of Detroit. So instead of sitting on the couch and playing PlayStation or whatever it may be, hop on a train, hop on a bus, and just go and say, all right, I did it. Bucket list, downtown Detroit.
You know what's on my bucket list? I wouldn't mind going back to my former employer, my former team, the Port Huron Prowlers.
For what reason?
I want to retire a Prowler. I want to get my jersey retired like we talked about and get into the Ring of Honor.
One-day contract. Let's do it.
I don't know if they actually listen anymore, the guys in Port Huron, Alex Johnson and Matt Graham. I don't know which one of you guys did it. The Instagram post they made, thank you for your service to the team, Trav. We'll never forget it. You guys are beauties. That was hilarious. That was really funny. Can I tell an interesting Port Huron story about the cheerleading team that they had?
Do you want to thank Ridge Wallets first? Because they are a great sponsor and they match your name.
Actually, I would love to, Dave, because if you're going to hire a whole team of cheerleaders for the team, you got to have money to do payroll. So enter the team at Ridge Wallet. Ridge Wallet is awesome. It's got my name. It's backed by a lifetime guarantee, lifetime warranty. So if you break it, they'll send you a new one. It's sleek, stylish. I love my leather version. It's incredibly sexy. Fits in the pocket, no problem. And on top of that, up to 12 cards, fits cash as well. They have an AirTag attachment. So if you're like me and you have a hard time keeping track of your wallet, you can get that attachment so you never lose your wallet again. And right now, go to the link in the video description at ridgewallets.com. Use the code TravSucks, TravSucks, for 10% off your Ridge Wallets today. Apple, Spotify, same thing. Pull over and safe to do so. Podcast and notes, 10% off the best wallet in the game, only from the team at Ridge.
Maybe we should switch that bonus code to TravWins, to start getting some positive energy.
I've been thinking about that for a while. Actually, if we're going to be honest, before I tell the cheerleading story, that has been the code forever, the TravSucks code. And it's self-deprecating. It's funny. You remember it. But I've kind of outgrown that, where I don't want to use that code anymore because it's like you manifest that energy, right? If I'm saying TravSucks, I'm going to manifest that. Mm-hmm. But the problem being is that I've done so many campaigns with so many companies where that code is still active. If I start changing the code, people may forget that code, or maybe they are confused which code to use. And then from a business perspective, it's not going to be as beneficial for the show and for the vlog. So I'm kind of torn on what I want to do.
Then let's spin it this way. It's when we say Trav sucks, we mean he sucks up rebounds. That's what he does.
Trav sucks up rebounds in your cash with these sponsors. Like a vacuum.
All right. Tell me about it. What do you got?
Cheerleaders. Okay, so the Port Huron Prowlers, this was a story I was told by one of the guys on the team. This is probably 5 or 6 years ago. One of the general manager at the time says, guys, we need something to bring people to the rink. Ah, cheerleaders. Let's hire a whole team of cheerleaders. And what do you think happened within less than a week of having them near the team?
Ooh, we've had some babies about 9 months later.
I'm not going to tell you exactly what happened, but you can probably figure it out, because after about a week, this said general manager comes in the locker room and says, okay, guys, new rule. You're not allowed to touch, talk, or interact with the cheerleaders. If I see anybody interacting, you're done. Simple as that. Because they'd all been taken care of within a week. Funny enough, in Mississippi...
As Shooter McGavin said, don't fraternize with the help, Gilmore.
Shooter. Funny enough, in Mississippi, though, we had cheerleaders as well. And it was the same thing. If you were caught or interacting with or mingling with any of the cheerleaders, you were gone. Man, I remember waking up, because I wake up early to, I start making my cup of coffee. I started doing some editing on my laptop. I remember one of the cheerleaders walking out of the house thinking to myself, nice. Yeah. Nice.
Well, listen. Yeah. Here's the thing. It's a very American thing. I mean, you look at the Laker girls, iconic. You look at the Cowboys cheerleaders, iconic. The competitions that they have down in Orlando every year, the world or the American championships for cheerleading. I mean, it's a thing. And there's a lot of American teams in the NHL that have cheerleaders to a certain extent. What they'll do is they'll put them up in their cheerleading outfits and they have them go out and shovel the ice during TV timeouts. Sometimes,
but those aren't cheerleaders though. Like I'm
yeah,
talking
they
actual.
Are. No. I'm talking. These are the same ones that'll go up and they'll have the pom poms in the crowd whenever there's a play. They'll come down the stairs and whatnot. it's a little bit different because you're in a rink and you don't have that access like you do at a football field. But it's a very American thing to do. It was actually, I asked when the Jets first came back, I said, hey, are we going to do the cheerleader thing? Chicago does it. A bunch of other teams do it. And they went, no.
Mark no, Scheifele.
We don't do that in Canada. That's not our thing.
Do you think hockey needs cheerleaders? Do you think hockey, NHL teams specifically, should have cheerleaders? They should have them in the public's eye, front and center, to bring people to the rink?
I think it all depends on your market. I think, look at it this way. Look over at soccer over in Europe, which I, please, while you're over there, go catch a footy game if you can. European football. I don't know what if you can make it to Madrid, you can go see a Premier League game. That would be incredible. I would just love to hear the story and feel like I was there. But that is a sport. Not only do they not have cheerleaders, they don't even have music. Like, they don't even play music over the loudspeakers. You know who does the singing? The home fans. That's the thing. So I'll tell you what gets butts in the seats more than anything. Winning. If you have to kind of dress up your whole situation with, hey, free scarf, cheerleaders, you know, all these different things, chance to win, then maybe your product isn't as good as you think it is if you have to dress it up with all these things. Now, that's a very broad statement. That's a very broad statement because I know in the NHL we have all those things and it is an experience and we've become accustomed to that. But if you look at the bare bones, European football, European soccer, they don't need any of that, and they sell out. Matt is the biggest sport in the world.
Well, I enjoyed watching European pro hockey way more than North American because, like you mentioned, there's no shoot to win. There's none of these like gimmicky interactions and games and challenges at the intermission. It's just hockey. The fans sing. Zamboni comes on. Repeat for three periods.
Bingo.
Commish, packed house. What do you think, Jackie? We need to talk.
Yeah, well, there's a perfect example where he had to wrestle bears just to get people in the building. And when it comes to desperation, I mean, you even look down at Mississippi or in Baton Rouge and Mississippi and some of the things that they've had to do there in order to get fans in. I mean, I get it. You're trying to force a round peg into a square hole. And I totally understand that, you know, the market for hockey in some of these areas, you have to dress it up with a lot of these other things to get people in the building to show them how good your product on the ice is. But it's a very careful balance.
I mean, Motor City was even doing dollar hot dog and dollar beer night, and they're still barely cracking more than 15% of the state or the stadium. So, I don't know.
I actually watched, I'd say, maybe 15 minutes of one of their games on YouTube. It popped up. I was still subscribed to the channel from when you were playing there, and it popped up. And, oh boy, it was a sparse crowd that night. I think there may have been more guys on the bench than there was in the crowd.
Whatever. Not my problem. Although, I think the greatest promotion in the whole movie is semi-pro, side note, is when he's like, I, Jackie Moon, will jump 20 cheerleaders from one end zone to the other, and he almost kills the one when he lands on her. Sorry, I got to stop with the movie quotes. Dave was giving me shit.
No, I love
we
it. I just wish I was more familiar with that movie.
You know, like when he's got the code, and he's trying to be like, what's the guy's name? The daredevil. Evel Knievel. He's trying to be like Evel Knievel and jump the cheerleaders. You know, or they do a free corn dogs night. Free corn dogs, Jackie. God damn it, Vakaitis, learn English.
By the way, you can get a whole bunch of free stuff if you sign up to be a Patreon member. Please go and do that. There's mugs, there's hockey cards, there's sweaters. My wife actually put in a request for one of those extra large Slang in the Biscuit sweaters. So, yeah, maybe when you ship it out here, we'll get a picture of her and we can use that as a promotional piece on the show.
Yeah, we got some new perks too. For $5, you sign up for the Patreon page right now. You're going to get all the untold stories from Motor City and Watertown. You're also going to get the deleted episodes that the league made me take down. They live on Patreon now if you want to see those. And then also for $5, you're going to get my trading card set. So you're going to get the 7-piece set. They're not an 8-piece set anymore, but you get all that for $5, $20. You get all the merch, the mugs, the sweaters, all that great stuff. Sign up today. $5, support the show.
And tell you what, we'll do a draw down the road that whenever my eye falls into my soup, we'll auction that off.
Game used.
The soup, not my eye.
Hey, I've already got that thing signed up on Gumroad or Sideline Swap or eBay. Dave's eye is like, I need that.
Hey, listen,
the soup. Oh. Let me unpackage this. I already got it taped up and everything.
The black eye that I had after that was, I mean, I couldn't open my eye for a good solid 2 weeks. And I know there's a guy by the name of Chris Simon who took a few knocks in the head. And Stanley Cup winner with the Colorado Avalanche. He was a journeyman, played with the Islanders, played with the... He played with the Islanders. I remember that one. He played with the Avalanche. I remember that one. Played with the Capitals. I remember that one.
Nordiques. Don't forget the Nordiques.
Had the Nordiques as well. Yeah, he was part of the move over to Colorado. He's fought everyone from Zdeno Chara to Ty Domi to Bob Probert to Vandermeer, I think his name was, one of his great, over 100 fights in his career. Man, the guy was an absolute, you talk about glue in the locker room. That was a guy that you were happy to have in your locker room because you felt a little bit safer out on the ice. But it's an absolute shame. His family saying that CTE, and if you're unfamiliar with CTE, go watch the Will Smith movie where he plays the African doctor. And yeah, it's a scary thing, man. And it was actually funny. I was chatting with my two kids about this. They were talking about, you know, brains and memory and whatnot and had questions. And I said, as much as we know about human biology, we are literally scratching the surface on the brain. Like we know next to nothing when it comes to the brain. And if even back to when I was playing, if we would have known then what we know now, I wouldn't have been sent back out on the ice as many times as I did after getting knocked in the head. I would have had to take a few days off concussion protocol, but it was usually like, all right, take a couple shifts off and get back out there. And the guys that were taking hits in the NHL back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and a guy like Chris Simon who did it through the 80s and 90s, the amount of knocks that he got to the head and not realizing the damage that he was doing, and from what we understand, bruises don't really heal in the brain, and it really does alter your personality. And from the reading that I've been doing, it worsens as you get older and as your brain gets older, and it's just it's a real crying shame because we're seeing more and more of these legendary fighters in the game dropping like flies with no warning ahead of time. And it's really sad. And football players and professional wrestlers and these people who, you know, have concussion after concussion, it's a scary thought, man. It's really a scary thought.
It's sad, though. You think a guy that was so successful, made X amount of dollars, playing how many years, how many points. He was actually, I think, a half a point per game his first year in Colorado. But to feel so alone and to feel that state and that presence of mind to do that, to end his own life, it's sad. It's really sad just to think of that. It's a shame that he couldn't get some help. But I don't think enough men check up on their friends. You know what I mean? For example, if I have a friend, I mentioned one to you last week, I was going through a hard time. Just a simple, hey, man, how you doing? Is everything good? You need any help? I'm here for you. Whatever you need. Just so simple. Can go such a long way. It's a shame he wasn't able to find that, though.
Yeah, and you know what? Maybe he didn't know he needed it. Maybe it was just one of those episodes where, you know, the depression hits a little bit harder for somebody who's had that kind of brain trauma than someone else, and you don't really think things through. But yeah, and it's funny, going back to my earlier point, I'm guilty. I wish I did reach out to my friends more. But what I think is, I say, well, if I send them and say, hey, what's up? Is everything good? Then, you know, I'm going to be, my nose is going to be buried in my phone for a conversation, and I've got this to do, and the kids got to be at this thing at that time, and I got to get the work done. And, you know, you start getting into your own head and you just kind of stay in your lane. And unfortunately, a lot of those times, those people get pushed out as your circle gets smaller. But yeah, sometimes it's, you never ask until it's too late. It's always regretful, but you can't hold that. I lost a friend this past year who I hadn't seen in quite some time. And I thought, I had that moment where I thought, man, maybe I should have sent him a text, but you can't take on that guilt, and you can't go into their mind and know what they were thinking. It just, I think Keanu Reeves said it best when Stephen Colbert asked him, Keanu, what happens when we die? And Keanu Reeves took a moment and he said, I know the people that we leave behind will miss us.
That's a certainty. Let me ask you a question, though. We have all these fighters that are committing suicide and ending their own lives, CTE. You know, we can put it to a combination of different things, and even the whole Matt Rempe thing where people are losing their minds. Why is he fighting, et cetera, et cetera. You're somebody who's trained in mixed martial arts. I'm training in mixed martial arts. Would you agree that to be a man in 2024, to be truly competent with the way, without getting into politics too much, with the way Canada's shaping up, you need to learn to be able to fight and be able to hold your own?
I don't think that necessarily makes you a man. I think we all fight in our own ways. I think taking care of your family, whatever that looks like for you, is first and foremost your number one priority. I don't think it's ever a bad thing. And I've had lengthy conversations about how North America, for whatever reason, does not have mandatory military enrollment before the age of 30. I mean, BTS, who is one of the biggest K-pop bands in the world, they all had to go in. They tried to get them out. Their label tried to get them out of it based on a arts thing, but it's like, nope, they gotta do, I think it's 1 year of military service before they turn 30, or else it could be jail time. There's a lot of countries that have that. And there was a young man actually who came into town. He was touring from Switzerland, and he had just finished up his service in Switzerland. And he said, I hated it when I went in. I hated it while I was there. But I appreciate the fact that I did it because I feel like it helped me grow up. And I know that I have these skills moving forward. And I wouldn't have learned them on my own. So more often than not, most people will not take the opportunity to learn things like that. And it does them more of a disservice. But I mean, and not to call out the United States of America, but we know how gun happy they are. And we see some of the fallout from that. So, I mean, why would I learn how to fight when I can keep a pistol at my sidearm? It's interesting. I mean, I think it's great. I mean, my boys know how to defend themselves. They're going to grow up with that. It's just you walk around with a little more confidence when you know that you have that something in the recess of your brain. You have that information that you can pull up at any time. And it's a great workout. It's a great, exhaustion for your mental capacity and your physical capacity. And it's never bad to have, but people find that kind of release in different ways.
I think just the idea of, like, if I'm walking around downtown at night with my mom or with my chick or stuff like that, or even if I'm by myself and, maybe a couple smaller goons come at me, okay, well, obviously if they all come at me with knives, I'm in trouble. But if I've been training, at least I have some idea that, okay, I could be competent enough to handle myself. And I think even you can attest to this, Dave, as a man doing Muay Thai, doing kickboxing, doing BJJ, the other day, I was sparring this guy, and I don't have a specific video of it, of this moment, but I was sparring this one guy at Muay Thai. And the week before, he's probably about 5'7", 5'8". He smoked me. I don't think I touched him one time. This week, not only did I start hitting him, I cracked him and I wobbled him. And there's a feeling of, and the only way I can describe it is if you haven't done it, it's like playing video games and you start shooting the guy in the head and then you end up winning the game, like that vibration, that feedback the controller gives you, like that feeling in the fist, like when you crack the guy and you wobble him and it's like I've just unstabilized this man. Like it's a very primal feeling and it adds a level of competency and confidence that, oh, like I can do this. I can handle myself. I think every man should get to experience it. I really think so. And also get punched in the head.
Absolutely. Do me a favor, based on that B-roll that you show every once in a while when you talk about Muay Thai, for your size and your reach, use that jab. Keep them to the outside. Do not let them get inside. Keep them as far back from you as possible.
That's one thing that we do talk about quite a bit, and I'm learning every single week because I film some stuff for the podcast and for the vlog. I film some stuff also to look back at the footage and see what am I doing right, what am I doing wrong. One of the instructors says, dude, you're the biggest guy in here. Everybody wants to fight you because you're a good test. They don't know how unskilled I am, but use that jab, like keep them at distance. And then once I started using the jab to keep guys at distance, man, I was making some good shots and I was keeping them at bay and I was feeling pretty good. Although, I'll leave you with one funny story before we finish the show. There's this one guy that came in, I sparred him, and he said, I've been training for a month. And I thought, oh, okay, I'm going to have a good time. This guy just started retraining in the last month. He'd been training like 5-6 years before that. And he's dropping like heel kicks and all these advanced moves. And I'm feeling a little bit overwhelmed because I know this guy's very, very, very skilled, significantly more skilled than I am. One of the instructors says, like, what are you doing? Like, stop this. You're an idiot. You're a meat stick. This isn't what we do here. And I ended up surviving 3 minutes with him. And then he went to fight somebody else, got knocked out on the ground, blood KO'd. That's what you get. Be respectful in the dojo.
Another quick piece of advice, just because you're going to use that jab so much. Now you're a southpaw by trade, right? Like you're left hand dominant.
Nope.
Well then why do you catch left?
It's weird.
Why do you catch right?
It's weird. I'm kind of ambidextrous. So in baseball, I catch with my left hand because I can throw only with my right hand. But in goaltending, I catch with my right hand because I can only throw with my left hand. Same way, like with guitar, I'd play like Kurt Cobain left-handed. My guitar teacher wouldn't string a guitar that way, so I had to learn the other way. So I can go both ways, but I jab left and then I strike with my right. But I can hit with my left as well. I can go both ways.
Okay, so which would be your power bomb hand? Which one is that? Your right hand?
My right hand, yeah.
Good. Make that your lead hand. Jab with that one. You're going to have way more accuracy. And for your size, if you want to keep guys on the inside, you're going to have that accuracy. Stand southpaw.
Kind of like guitar. Because I remember my guitar teacher telling me, hey, I know you want to play left-handed, but if you play the other way around, your strong hand is going to actually really benefit you here as opposed to the other way around. So,
a great example, if anyone wants to go on a YouTube deep dive, and I won't spell it for you, but... Google Vasily Lomachenko, who it was the one that I learned this from. He is a orthodox boxer, but he stands southpaw because he says, why wouldn't I lead with my powerful hand? And I can always use my footwork to set up for that shot later. His nickname was The Matrix. This is the way he moved. Vasily Lomachenko. Do yourself a favor if you're a fan of the Sweet Science and go check out some of his stuff.
That's awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to next week's show. I'm going to be in Calgary starting tomorrow for a couple days with my missus. And in the Lake Louise, I got a nice little hookup at the Chateau Lake Louise to the gentleman who got the hookup. Thank you so much. Looking forward to next week. And then on the other end of the screen, someone's going to the lake, although the lake is not frozen, or it's not thawed, excuse me, taking his beautiful wife and two kids.
Yeah, my wife and I are going to get away for a week and go hit up one of the many beautiful lakes that we have close to the Lake of the Woods here in our beautiful province of Manitoba. So maybe enough to get some ice fishing in if the shores are still frozen up. I think they will be. And just relaxing. I think my wife and I are both getting a little burnt out. We're looking forward to the break and looking forward to coming back in April with a full head of steam.
Well, I know it was stressful. You sat in that exact same producing room for 2 months waiting for me to come back, and you're like, yes, he's back.
All I had was me and that guitar. That's it. Take a liking to a Viking.
Something's in the way. It's Rob. Anyway, thank you everybody for listening. Sling the Biscuit drops a new episode every single Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern in downtown Toronto, 10 a.m. in the heart of the prairies in Winnipeg and Saskatoon as well. I haven't forgotten about you. 9 a.m. in Calgary in the Bow Valley and 8 a.m. here at Pacific Central Time in the Pacific Northwest in downtown Vancouver. I'm Travis Ridgen. That's Dave Wheeler. We'll see you next week.